Well, welcome. Call to order the February 8th, 2016 Finance Committee of the Whole. Mrs. Gus, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Buckholz?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mr. Buczynski?
Here.
Here. Thank you. We will have public participation now, but we will also have it at our regular meeting. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board? Mr. Cooper?
Do you need me over there for this?
Yes, we do. I think we have it.
It would be more helpful.
Yeah. It'll just pick up on the mics, Jeff, so thank you.
One quick thing. Just want to remind you, Erica, that you had said you wanted to bring up tonight, at least I assume it's tonight, about the cell phone stipend, and I didn't see it on the agenda for tonight. So that's one. Now what they were talking about. What happens when public administrators spend public dollars without proper oversight to make sure that those dollars aren't being wasted? We end up with the Greg Tang Math Workshop Money Wasting Fiasco. I'm not questioning any value received from this math guru. What I'm questioning is a total lack of coordination in having 24 teachers and one principal attend this workshop on a school day necessitating 24 substitute teachers. Lombard District 44 is a private workshop this May 27th with him on a Friday, a SIP day, no subs needed. Greg Tang offers a $20 discount per person for groups of 10 or more. According to the four checks that District 41 wrote for this, number 20108 and 20109 written on March 17th last year, 20151 written on 47 and 20278 written on 421, no discounts were taken. It is $500 in discounts apparently missed. This is besides the approximate $2,400 in substitutes unnecessarily hired for that day, May 7th. So how does waste like this occur? My take on this perfect storm allowing this to happen. First, the assistant principal of accountability has a history of fiscal waste. Incidents such as her spending over $400 on Gibbons popcorn gifts, charging us for an early check-in on a flight, upgrading on a rental car, including three guests at a dinner when visiting non-estate district. These all show that being diligently fiscally responsible with our dollars is not high on this non-residence list. Secondly, her boss, being a nice guy, is not an acceptable substitute for not properly overseeing spending. Couldn't we have just sent one teacher from each school and had them report to their peers on a SIP day? Even with subs, we would have saved over $6,200.
30 seconds.
Lastly, as usual, I'm standing in front of the board enlightening the president and her followers on district spending that they are supposed to oversee. It's become crystal clear that the board majority isn't interested in finding this waste, nor interested in listening to reports of it, nor interested in generally doing anything about it. To those that do care, just over a year for real reform to begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Okay, that looks like it. All right, our discussion item, our five-year financial projections, Forecast 5.
Becky, you want to introduce Greg and the work that we're going to be doing tonight?
This is Greg Kubitz from FICAST, formerly known as PMA, also associated with Illinois School District Liquid Assets Fund. So it's just an extension of what the services that PMA has offered in the past. We worked with Greg over the last couple of months with assumptions and analyzing the data and making sure that all factors were considered. As you looked at this, I'm assuming that you guys all got this last week, that you looked at that we offer several scenarios, that there's a base case model and everything is built off the base case model. So we've got conversations about elimination of student fees and what would that do to our funding. And then with the conversations that are going on in Springfield, what would a two-year property tax increase look like? If they actually go through and do the TRS pension cost shift, what that would look like and what that would do to our finances. And then finally, the shift in special education funding to the state aid formula and the loss of revenue that District 41 would realize. And so then we give it to you in one big picture at the end so that you can see, as I call it, the perfect storm happens, and all of those things would come to pass if Springfield actually does the work that they were elected to do, then what it would do and why. When we make decisions that concern the district's finances, whether they be revenue sources or they be expenditures, that we look at and analyze the data to see the effect of those expenditures. So I'm going to turn it over to Greg. I'm going to let him do the presentation, but I'm sure I will have comments throughout.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Becky, and thank you for having me here tonight. As mentioned, my name is Greg Kubitz. I'm a senior financial consultant with Forecast 5. And of PMA, thank you. So, give you a little bit of background. Many of you may have been familiar with the presentation from PMA, and same methodology. I actually work for both companies, so it's not like the district switched companies or anything. What we did is we actually spun off Forecast 5 about 4 years ago, and with it came a host of products, which you can see listed here. 5Sight being more of a data analytics tool for school districts to really be able to go out and analyze and benchmark and see how they're performing in certain areas compared to peer districts. 5Maps is a mapping tool, anything that's got a geocode, student data, things like that, where you can plot, help in making decisions regarding transportation and so forth. 5Share is our social platform where business managers, superintendents can communicate with each other, sharing different topics. 5Lab is more of a consulting type of tool. But 5Cast is what we're going to be talking about tonight, and that's our projection engine. And just like FPP, which the district used to use, we've rolled a lot of that same methodology, those same calculators and tools within the new 5Cast engine. The difference is that 5Cast is a lot more robust, and that we go into a lot more levels of detail than we did in FPP. We go down to the general ledger level of detail. We're not limited to 5 years of history. We can bring in multiple years of history. So it just, again, depends on what the district's goal is in achieving that. So just like FPP, 5Cast, we can develop a multi-year financial plan, which is why we're here tonight. And as Becky mentioned, we can do a lot of what-if comparisons with scenarios. There are a lot of unknowns as they relate to projections, which we'll talk about tonight. So it's important to be able to model those impacts and those discussions and how that's going to impact your district. As I mentioned, we go down to the general ledger level of detail. That allows us to do detailed budget performance analysis. So we can look at specific line items down to that account number level of detail and see where you've been trending in certain areas.
Did we do that for this, Becky?
We loaded 5 years of actual financial data out there from the general ledger.
Right. By general ledger?
Right. Yep, by account number, correct. So with that, you can also assist with preparing the budget because we go down to that account number level of detail. You're looking at projections. You want to use this then to assist in uploading it back into your budget system. And then lastly, just like FPP, we want to make sure that we present the information in a clear, concise way that anyone that's looking at the district from an outside perspective can understand exactly what's going on. So some of the data that's incorporated into the 5Cast model, we have 5 years of audited annual financial report, revenue, expense, balance information as well. So as we're looking at some of our graphs and charts towards the end of the presentation, all that historical information comes from your AFRs, your audited information. But we do look at the general ledger level of detail. So we went back 5 years, and then we also included the current budget to that level of detail. We have the tax levy extension, maximum tax rate, and equalized assessed valuation information for 2014, which is the most recent. We should get 15 data here in the next month or so. We have historical enrollment for the fall housing report, as well as current enrollment and projected enrollment. And then lastly, district assumptions. So Becky and I sat down, we began the process a few months ago, and then as things changed, as we began to get more information or recurrent information, we've updated the model with that, and that's always an ongoing process. As things go throughout the year, you get new pieces of information. We're always making sure that the model is current with that.
So what are some of those large assumptions that you have in the model?
We're going to talk about those right now. So
I would just add right here, though, when Cheryl Witham comes, she is familiar with this model and she has worked with it in her current district, so she will bring that working knowledge.
Let me ask it a different way. All the assumptions that you're going to present in the room this deck, there's nothing that, there's no other assumptions, that major assumptions?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. We'll cover the major ones today. So with that, we start with looking at the district's operating budget. And for operating funds, you can see on the bottom, those include your ed, O&M, transportation, working cash, and sports funds. So again, the district's operating revenues total just over $48 million between those funds, and the largest piece of that coming from property taxes, as you can see in the pie chart, 86%. Followed by your other local revenue, which would be your fee income, interest income, corporate personal property replacement tax. Followed by your other state, which would be your reimbursements for special education, transportation, general state aid, and then lastly, your federal grants.
I just want to point out the reason that we only use the funds that are listed, because those are the funds that we use from our board policy to determine our fund balance, that 25% level.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so being that property tax revenue is the biggest source of revenue for the district, we'll start by taking a look at those assumptions. And we started with the ones that have the least amount of impact in regards to your property tax revenue, and that being your existing EAB change. We've got a historical EAB, again, through 2014, and you can see that the recent decreases, again, following the downturn in the housing market. Last year's decrease, not as much as prior years, so hopefully you're starting to come out of that trend. 2015, we do have a 0% in there. Hopefully that'll come in a little bit higher than that, but again, we put in the zero. And then going forward, we projected 2% increases going forward. Again, existing AB doesn't have a huge impact on your overall revenue. It really just is going to drive your tax rate, which you're not engaged or bumping up against your maximum rate at this time. So districts that are in that situation, this is a little bit more of an important driver, because then now you're looking at other ways on how to levy those dollars. So again, just for more perspective, this does apply to the tax rate, which then applies to your new growth number, which, next slide.
So would you get 2%?
2% is just more of a normal growth. Again, being
normal
this
by what?
Well, I mean, you should see property value growing by at least 2%.
Yeah, but we haven't over the last 12 years. So my question was going to be, why don't we just run an average line growth relationship and just do this versus 2% flat?
Yeah, I mean,
I know there's a little. I know it doesn't impact a lot, but from a representation perspective, I'd like to see that a growth rate, if we could, versus just a flat rate. Because if we can't define where we got to, if you're saying 2% because you're using a yield curve, a 10-year yield, okay. But if we're saying just because?
Right.
Well, again, the EAB really only affects the calculation of the tax rate.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect the dollars.
It doesn't affect the dollars.
Really.
Correct. But we have a presentation here that we're going to be presenting to the public, and just to say, well, some of them may ask, well, why didn't you have why didn't you just go to two? I can say, well, we did an average growth rate over the last 10 years, and it's going to go this way.
Right.
So
we wanted to build in something because we don't think it's going to be flat like we've got in 2015. But again, you don't want to be overly aggressive and you know, put in two spots.
Right, but that's projections, right? So
correct.
I think the projections, the average growth rate versus the flat rate is better.
Switching then to the next assumption of new growth. And again, the amounts here are in millions. Last year, you got about $13 million in new growth, and we kept that number flat for 2015. But again, then built in more of a, hopefully more normal growth of $15 million going forward. For every $1 million of new growth, the district gets about $36,000 in additional revenue. So you could get some additional revenue for this, so you're looking at a little over $500,000 in additional revenue based on these new growth assumptions.
Can I ask a question in relationship to the last two graphs? Every year, if you projected in 15 million in new construction, that is added to your base EAB, correct?
Correct.
Years ago.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
And you grow.
What was the number again for every $1 million in?
You get about $36,000
in additional revenue. So again, I think that just reiterates my point. I mean, because we're trying to go forward, and just saying 36 for the next 5 years. Versus something that we can show a growth, or, you know, 12,000 this year, 20,000 next year, 36,000.
Right. 36,000 for every $1 million in the growth.
Right, but if you show that growth, then it's going to show your relationship and your revenues on page 18, 19 or whatever, right? Versus a flat level growth.
Right.
So just to clarify that, what you're asking, Patrick, so if you look from 2010 to where we are now in 2015, that would not average out. So what's your assumption in terms of moving this forward and showing some deviation year on year?
Right. I'm okay with something that's four in the lake. If they want to take it 10 years, the growth down versus
take this and
extension
move it. Yeah.
up.
Mm-hmm.
But just saying flat, and then on page 7, you say for every $1 million growth, it gives you $36,000 in revenue. And then on page whatever we talk about the revenue, we've already said it's going to be 15 at flat. I would prefer seeing that growth go up so we can more accurately reflect the increase in revenue just associated with EAD growth.
But it's not, let's go back a step. This is the whole levy thing. It's not EAD growth that gets you your revenue.
Right.
It's not, because there's
right.
a tax rate applied to it.
Right.
So, what does get you growth, potential growth, is new construction,
right.
holding all else equal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, if you choose not to hold all else equal, and you let new construction growth go into your levy request, holding all else equal at that point, everyone's tax bill goes down for our portion of the tax bill, because it's a EAD
right.
pool that you're working with. So,
and don't forget, we're subject to PTEL.
Right.
And that really drives the dollars that we receive.
Right.
But PTELs, subject to PTELs, are 5%.
Right.
So we haven't been close to that. But
no,
more importantly,
5%, yeah, right.
More importantly, the statement of the EAB, the 2% increases, it's a fine graph to have. But really, you're talking about the tax rate relative to the EAB.
Correct.
This $15 million a year has a potential for the increased revenues if all EAB else stays constant.
Right.
So, anyways.
So this, you assume $540,000 a year
correct.
For those
yeah.
next year. So the increase.
Patrick, are you saying that you'd rather see not just 2010, but taking it beyond that and then averaging that? I mean, back in the 2005,
right.
taking those numbers
right.
as an average to give us some projection.
Correct.
Right. I agree with that because we're and it's been bad news, which we're probably not going to see that kind of thing. I hope.
Right.
I mean, if we do,
right.
But it would, so we're taking bad news, really bad news, and then we're projecting and. We can argue all this, all these things that don't have impact, but I guess if we're going to show these, then we probably should show something that takes averages that we can show. I'd agree with Patrick on this. That gives us the best assumptions going forward. And I know you're probably trying to be kind of conservative.
With always conservative on revenue.
But it does have, and I understand that, but it does have some impact. Some sky is falling impact in a couple of years that the world's ending.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I tend to agree that we should go back and take a look at that. I'm sure Becky, you can plug those numbers in at some point.
Well, and I would just add that when you look at the last 10 years of economic data and the decline in assessed value over the last 10, but probably the last 8 years, it's declining. It hasn't limited what a school district collects in their tax extension because of the PTEL formula. That limits us. This is just demonstrating that we do expect to see new growth in the district, which to me says that there's it's not rosy, it's not excessive increases when you're projecting revenues, but at least we expect to get something of the new growth.
Yeah. Maybe that's the asterisk to this because, as we've done this before in the past, that the response is always the same, and it's to the point, we're looking back, and if you average those, you're going to get some different numbers. But if we're, putting $15 million at 2016 and $17 million, what's that based on? So there's this assumption that, like you said, that there will be growth. And I think that that's an important asterisk to put there. But we know, as the numbers come in, that will they'll be adjusted for.
I'm not saying make a rocket scientist. I'm just saying put something in there that's formulaic that we can stand behind.
Right, like your example, if it's a 10-year T-bill that you're estimating for your projections, then your T-bill was at 2%.
Move directly into slide 8.
Thank you.
Yep, and this being the most important factor, being into our substitute detail, is your CPI. And CPI, we again have historical CPI through 2016 now. The 0.7% will be what you'll use in next year's levy. Going forward, we use a 1% CPI. Again, just typically the 10 and 20 year average are more 2.1, 2.2%.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we used to use historically. But as you can see, CPI has been low the last couple of years, mainly due to gas prices. Again, we're we're being a little more conservative again on that assumption. Yeah, because you are directly tied to that. This will be your growth outside of what you get for new construction. 1% is what we use going forward. Again, hopefully we can see higher ones than that, but no one has a crystal ball to predict what those are going to be. Other local revenues, CPBRT, fees, textbooks, food services, all other, we've kept those flat over FY16 budget levels in the base scenario. General state aid, again, it's a formula based on your enrollment, more specifically your average daily attendance and your available local resources. And what they use for your available local resources is your EAB and your CPBRT numbers. The district is in the alternate formula, which the foundation level is set at $6,119. Unfortunately, you don't get that. You get about $355 per student. So you're barely in the alternate formula. You're trending towards flat grant. Enrollment is expected to stay flat. You know, we've looked at historically your enrollment numbers, and they've been right around that 3,500 number, so that's what we kept in here going forward. For FY16, the proration is set at 92%. And I say set at 92% as of right now because, as you can see going forward, we use an 89% proration. And the reason we adjusted that down is because last year the proration started at 89%, but then it actually ended up coming at about 87% because it shorted you the last payment in half.
Right.
So, being that the state is in the budget that it's in right now, we're anticipating something that could happen again this year. So we use an 89% proration going forward. Again, that's in our base scenario. We'll show what happens when we change the formula one of our scenarios. Just real quick on that one. Everything else, other state revenues, federal revenue, we've kept those flat. So not anticipating any growth in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a graphical representation of your general state aid. So you get about 1.3 to 1.4 million. Again, pretty flat overall, tied to your enrollment. Slight decreases, again, that would be the offset to your EAB growth, is that it's having a negative impact on your general state aid. And then here's our graph on enrollment. So you can see you've been right around that 3,500 number, give or take, so we've kept the number there going forward. Typically, districts are seeing decreasing enrollment because their smaller kindergarten and first grade classes are replacing their larger middle school classes going out. But this district, that hasn't been the case. You guys have maintained pretty steady enrollment even through that. Miles is still a very attractive place to live, so people are interested in the area.
This might be for Paul. Mm-hmm. I know I read the memo about the startup. Did we end up deciding to do that?
Yeah, we'll put it in next year's budget.
So that
one he will commence a little after July
that'll
to start that work.
So
yeah, done. It will.
Jumping over to the expenditure side, operating funds total again, just over $44.3 million. The biggest piece of that coming in personnel costs and salaries and benefits, followed by your purchase services, which is ending at outsource. Followed by your supplies and materials, which the main driver there outside of just regular supplies would be your utility costs. Followed by your other objects, which is where your special education tuition lies. And then lastly, your capital outlay. And again, this is just regular capital outlay. We'll talk about the capital project plan on the next slide. So some of the assumptions as they relate to the expenditure side. Salaries, current contract, or applicable, which goes through FY18. With teachers used to be negotiated. And again, the teachers and administrators are tied to the GEA, which is tied to CPI. We did build into the known retirement savings for FY 17 and 18, so you'll have some retirees after this year and next year. So typically they're replaced at lower salaries, so there's some savings associated with those retirees. And again, based on discussions, we've added 7.3 additional FTE for next year. On the benefit side, we've modeled health and dental, 7% annual increases. Most of that's in your health. Dental is just a little piece of your benefits budget. All other, we put in at 2%. And again, as I mentioned, that typically trends more of the CPI, 2.1, 2.2%. If you look at some of the line items, historically, they fluctuate, especially education fund and other objects. That's where your special education tuition lies. And that budget can make or break a budget, just because if you have a child or two that moves into the district, you're going to wait to see what you budgeted, and the reverse thing true if the child is out of the district. But again, we modeled cost at 2% annual increases. We did build in the transfers, and that should be the O&M fund. I apologize for the typo there. To the capital projects built and based on the capital projects plan that was discussed.
So Ed Fund should read O&M?
Should be O&M, yeah. Correct.
Can we go back to the 7.3 additional FTEs? Where does that come from?
And I work with Laura Campbell, and her work with the principals and building staff, that's what they determined that they will need for next year.
Yeah.
And that's a preliminary number. I mean, that includes the 3.0 contingency. We were being very conservative with this. We have not finished our staffing work, so this is by no means a guarantee that that's what we'll be needing or asking for. But as we sit here right now, we went with, like, the biggest possible number that we thought to put into these projections, again, to be as conservative as possible. So that's not a guarantee.
And that doesn't mean that drives the budget.
Right. This is an assumption to be conservative.
Right.
Got it.
And may I make one other distinguishing factor? The teacher increases are tied to those percentages. Administrators can vary, and that isn't necessarily what we have to have, but it's what was used for the modeling.
In our AFSCME staff?
We have that percentage.
Built in, yeah.
Okay, so on this next slide, we combine everything, the revenues and expenditures. We've broken the revenue up into major categories of local, state, and federal. You can see your local revenues are going to grow pretty much at the CPI plus new growth being your property taxes are driving that. State revenue being driven mostly by your general state aid, so you can see the decreases there. And then federal revenue, again, we've got that flat. On the expenditure side, salaries and benefits, we have a little bit of a bump in next year due to the additional FTE. Offset by some of the retiree savings. And then at 18, we have some retiree savings there. But then going forward, based on the salary and benefit increases, more about a 2.8% increase. And then all other costs at 2%. Now, we wanted to highlight the yellow section there of the surplus and deficit, because that's your operating surplus in this case. So, but as we move down the next section there, your other financing, that represents the transfers out of the O&M fund into the capital projects fund for the based on that, on the capital projects plan, then you have that resulting surplus or in some cases deficit. So again, just showing the difference that your operating funds are operating at a surplus, but based on these transfers, that is going to cause you to deficit spend if these transfers come to fruition in the plan. You have then the beginning fund balance, and then lastly the projected year end balance based on those surpluses or deficits. And then we build in a couple of fund balance health indicators. One is a percentage of expenditures, and one is a number of months of expenditures. Again, just to give you an idea of what does that fund balance mean for the district. You know, if the district were to not get another dollar worth of revenue after June 30, you know, this is what how much they would have to have in the bank to be able to pay their bills.
Becky, what are the assumptions in the transfers, and are some of them assumptions, or are they concrete?
Use the list that we worked with the board in November and December for future years.
Okay.
We know that those are not exact numbers, but we use those to drive
And in fact, our fiscal 2016 number is about 1.6 million. I got that right.
Due to the roofing?
And some other items.
Well, with the soft costs in there, then that pushes that up a little bit. So.
Are part of the transfers the construction bonds that were taken out for the building addition?
No, those funds sit in the capital projects fund, okay. So they're not representative.
Just for clarification, because that's a good question, Peter, those are just their soft cost numbers, too. But those are, they've presented to us a five-year plan, I believe it was 5 years. The big Hadley group appears to be in fiscal 2019 that we all talked about. Mm-hmm. You just took those numbers that you presented, added some soft costs in the price, it appears. Okay, did you just do a percentage?
I just did a percentage.
Okay, right. What was this, roughly 5% for soft costs, 10%?
Help me out, Dave. What are we having for soft costs? I want to say...
It was under... Between maybe 10 and 12.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
They're 12 and a half. Yeah. Based on the fiscal 2016.
But the work will actually drive those numbers.
Right.
Again, these are just projections. This is a future look at the future. And as Greg said, none of us have a crystal ball. And so we're using the information that we have currently.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question? How is this capital plan that we got recognized in the budget, if it is?
Well, it isn't recognized in the operating fund.
Right.
This doesn't include, again, these scenarios do not include the capital projects fund, and those expenses are in the capital projects fund.
Okay. Just to clarify that.
Again, we went back and used the board policy and the administrative procedures that support that and used those funds to determine our level of fund balance as compared to our expenditures. Mm-hmm. We wanted that policy and that procedure to be our guiding force.
To reflect in here. Mm-hmm. Got it. Mm-hmm.
So it looks like in here 19 is the fiscal cliff, if you will, where we go from positive to negative. And is that generally because of the compounding nature of the reduction in the state revenue with the expenses going up because of the planned retirements?
Yeah, there's no retirement savings that year. You still have an operating surplus of $3 million, but that year you got a $5 million transfer out due to these capital project plans. So that's really pushing your deficit down. You know, because as you look historically, your transfers have only been around $3 million, but that's a big year for the plan.
Okay. All right.
And there's ample time to talk about how you fund those projects with the tools that you have, either debt certificates. That much like you sold a year ago to fund the projects that you did during the summer of 2015 and projects that we'll do during the summer of 2016, there's that debt extension base you have available to you to issue non-referendum debt. So there's multiple ways that you can look at the future, which is the purpose of the financial projection, and to carve out those milestones where you need to make decisions to make the best use of the tools that you have.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think could I ask that we also get a similar worksheet like this, but if you hold local revenues flat through 2019, is that the number that 2021?
You mean for CPI?
Nope. For property? Just hold local revenues flat.
All local.
So 43,481.
What do you do with new construction?
Huh?
What do you do with new construction? You allow it to go into your budget and increase it?
Yeah. I just want to show, I would like to represent, if we hold the conversation of keeping local revenues flat for the next 6 years, sans new construction, what that would do to our budget.
I would just add to that, I would just do a subset line underneath it that shows you new construction assumption and have that $45,000 increase or whatever it comes to.
Because so that's
$540,000.
Yeah. How much is
it?
$540,000.
$500,000. $36 per million. that what it is?
Yeah, 6,000.
Yep.
Okay, so
yep.
450,000, right? And that's right, about a 450,000 increase.
Just so we can have the conversation in black and white, this is what happens if we keep local revenue flat for the next.
And you'll get somewhat of a picture right. of that when we get to the graph where it says mm-hmm. base case less the junior yeah. property freeze.
But this, yeah. this shows me numbers. Right. And this shows me I can take this to somebody and says, if we keep revenues flat for the next 7 years, this is what happens to the district's overall financial picture. Yeah.
That's making an assumption, though, that you don't adjust your expenses.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
We have to be fair.
Well, it's a good representation, though, right? Because that assures you now you can fine tune where you need to make how much right. you need to adjust.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, I'm okay with that, but the assumption would be that if you're taking in less money, that you're going to cut costs somewhere to adjust for the less money. So we can say, hey, this is to my neighbor. This is we don't take any more money, and this is what's going to happen to our poor school district. We should be being fair and saying, but at the same time, we need to make.
Yeah, condo is the decision making.
I think it gives you the amount. It gives you the number. You know, mm-hmm. you need to go cut.
No.
And maybe you determine, you know what, we can only cut half of it, or we can cut.
If it's used for that purpose, I'm
fine. Yeah, no, I think that's the goal. I think that's the goal. I mean, so, but here's what happens. For me, it's important, and I brought this up earlier. It's the new construction number. The new construction doesn't subsidize tax reductions for everybody else. If you do that flat, it will. So holding everybody else constant, which is what the goal area is, and when you add that new line in, it will then accumulate to the next year. So if you're 43,841, and you add 450, the next year is going to be at 44,2 and change. And then you're adding it to 15,000,000, another 450, and it goes up. Yeah. And you just keep
as long as that's represented, based on new construction, not
right.
increased revenue.
Right. The increased revenue for a local is based on new construction, which our assumption is 15,000,000 a year. To me, that is a good baseline. I agree with Kurt and Patrick, but it will then give us a number that we can focus on year by year. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is what needs to be done. If you need to, you're just making an annual cut, well, that helps that year, but if you can make a cut that's, run through fiscal years going through a systematic cut or whatever, a program cut or whatever it is, that follows every year in and year out, then that's going to show up too as a bigger benefit.
So just to clarify, you're looking just for a 0%, so you want new construction to be included, but a 0% CPI, basically.
Flat
revenue would not include construction.
Flat
revenue stands to construction.
Every year the new construction is going to add to the solid pool, and then the construction comes in, it just keeps adding up. Sure. And then everybody's tax bill.
For every year, not just 2 years.
So we'll fix it instead of having it build on a percentage, we'll fix it.
Fix it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fix it. Right. And then.
It just put a line item underneath local so it just represents that number. So as we talk about this, this is something that we're going to hopefully pull out.
So subtotal.
Every conversation.
Subtotal that.
Yep.
Subtotal that. And then go down to the top.
I want to be conscious of the time because I know you want to walk us through these scenarios too.
Sure. Next slide, again, just a graphical representation just showing revenues compared to expenditures. Again, this is the operating, so this is before other financing. So you see on the final left, revenues outpacing expenditures resulting in surpluses to the right. This next slide then is the 11-year chart. And if you look at the red line represents the aggregate fiscal year imbalance, and again, it's the aggregate of these operating funds during this 11-year time period. So through 2015 is actual for the AFR. 16 is based on budget, and then 17 through 21 are based on the assumptions built into the Chase model. The blue line then represents the 25% fund balance target. So you can see that you are staying above that fund balance through 2019, but then sometime during fiscal year 20, you fall below that fund balance and end up below your targeted 25% mark. This next slide, now we're starting to jump into our scenarios. And same information as the prior slide, but we made a few modifications just so that we could compare these a little easier. again, the red line, same information, but we truncated this down to just be your last year of actual for 2015 and then projection. I've color-coded the data label so that you can correspond the amounts to the line. The blue line, same, again, information. Now, this yellow line represents what would happen is if you reduced student fees by $250,000 starting next year, and then that's a compounded, that's kept in there every year, so that impact is compounded over the projection period.
So it goes up afterwards for a couple of years, then it starts coming down.
The yellow
is that
line.
Because of the... Is the yellow line is the...
That's the impact.
The fees.
That's
less
the new
fees.
Line based on the fee.
Yep. So it's almost flat. And then when it drops down like that, is that the effect of that capital budget?
Right. Correct. Yeah, okay. You start to see those capital lines. This next one is the two-year property tax freeze. So again, essentially what we're doing there, this is based on legislation that's being proposed, that you would take your CPI for 2016, which, as we know, is 0.7%, so you're not losing a whole lot there, and then your CPI for 2017, which at this point is 1% that we have projected, and essentially putting those at zero. So you're only getting new revenue based on your new construction. And you can see what that impact would be, and that's just for a two-year property tax freeze. There is talk that if this gets put in place, that it may never go away, mm-hmm. because it's always going to coincide then with election years. Mm-hmm. So it's always going to be a campaigning kind of tool that, hey, I voted to keep your property tax frozen 2 years ago, I'm going to do the same thing for you again this year. So, again, this is just a two-year property tax freeze in this scenario. This next scenario shows the, again, base case. All these scenarios are independent of each other. Less costs associated with the TRS pension cost share. Okay, so as many of you are aware, the state secret retirement system is underfunded at this point. The state has not been living up to its obligation. So the thought is that they may start passing those costs on to local school districts. This scenario shows that they would begin to shift 0.5% of those costs starting next year, and then increase that shift 0.5% per year. So 0.5% in 17, 1% in 18, 1.5% in 19, and so forth, until it got to the acceptable level, which is anywhere between 7.5% and 8%. So this projection doesn't go up that far. This gets you to about 2.5% by fiscal 2021. And you can see, again, that impact is about about $120,000. Starting next year for every 0.5% that's shifted. Okay. This next line here, you can see the dark blue line represents what would happen if they adopt the ISBE proposal of how to fund GSA and your special education extraordinary reimbursement next year. And what they would do is take that special ed extraordinary, which is a separate line at this point, they would roll that into the GSA formula. And in doing so, they would increase the foundation level, which is currently at $6,119, to $6,327. They would also fund it at 100%, as opposed to the 92 or 89 or whatever it's been the last couple of years. Okay, so that's the good news. You would get additional revenue that they're funding the GSA at 100%, and the foundation level is going up. However, they're taking out of the other pocket of your special and extraordinary costs. Mm-hmm. And you can see the net impact is a loss to the district of about $180,000 per year. Again, this one does have some chance of passing because it comes from the Illinois State Board of Ed, not from legislators. What it does require, though, is that the state would kick in an additional $312 million to funding education, which isn't out of the realm of possibility because they did increase last year, even though they don't have a budget, they did increase education funding by $269 million this year. And Ronner stated the state address a few weeks ago. He did mention he doesn't want to support anything that takes money out of school districts' pockets, which you can see in this case, the scenario would. So, something we have to keep an eye on. The whole goal is here is to try and shift dollars down to your districts that are in the foundation level formula, so those are the districts that are relying heavily on state aid and are suffering due to that proration. So, this would shift those dollars away from your flat grant, your ultimate formula districts into those districts.
There is some discussion to mitigate that. We've talked about this at the last board meeting with some districts proposing a hold harmless so that it would zero out. I mean, it would be less of a percentage that would be moved out of that. So there's that. You know, we need to keep an eye on that. I mean, I think this is, you know, a good example of, you know, voices downstate Because it's a chunk of money.
Yes. And then this last one is the...
Armageddon.
Yeah, we call it the worst case. So this is everything now combined. The student fee reduction, the two-year property tax freeze, the pension cost shift, and the shift of the special education funding to GSA. And you can see that combining all those scenarios, you know, what it does to the district picture, quickly deteriorates your fund balance based on those changes. So not to say that any or all of these are going to happen, but we wanted to at least demonstrate the impact of what these could have on the district's overall picture, because as we're standing here a year, 2 years from now, you know, and this picture will look different, you know, we want to at least highlight why, you know, what are some of the things that are out there. Again, these are projections. You know, this is what we know right now. We want to be able to model these one as, and you know, as you're discussing changes, how are these various proposals going to impact your district specifically? And then this last slide, again, just more for illustration purposes. This is combining all the scenarios on one graph, so more of a reference. Same information, just a summary.
So, Becky, we have built into our fiscal philosophy this AP that I know you've referred to, mm-hmm. that under no circumstances should the fund balance be maintained at less than 10% of the preceding year's operating expenses without approval of the full board and a written rationale for reducing reserves below 10%. So this worst-case scenario represents what in terms of our operating?
Here's fund balance, because it also says if you read further, that no more than 25%.
Right, yeah. Well, we know that, you know, but there was built in when this was written, this stopgap of 10%, knowing that you need to have X number of dollars, you know, in your budget. So,
well, from my experience, I would say that a 10% fund reserve doesn't adequately protect you so that you have the resources to pay your obligations, mostly payroll. Mm-hmm. 10% is a very, very low fund. Okay. Most districts, there is anywhere from 25 to 33, at least 4 months worth of expenditures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Why is that with a guaranteed revenue source?
Timing of when revenues come. We receive revenues in September, August-September time frame, from the second installment of taxes, and the first installment comes in May and June. So it's just the timing of that, that it gets you through those months when you may not have revenues coming in. It sees you through that crunch. Then you end the fiscal year with... typically quite a bit of cash in the bank, but that's because taxes come in early and you're holding those for the following year's budget.
Yeah, as you saw, I mean, 86% of your revenue comes in via property tax. You get half of that in June and half of that in September. Right. So as you're starting that fiscal year, you get a big chunk of money in September, but then you've got to make that last until June 1 in the Dade County case. So there are a number of districts that if they don't have adequate fund balance on hand that have to go into a short-term borrowing type of model called tax anticipation warrants, which you don't want to get into because then now you're borrowing against next year's revenues until you get those two taxes.
So we historically have been a district, we have never utilized those tax dollars in the other part of that fiscal year. It's 7.5%.
You take the 3,771 divided by the fiscal of the expenses of fiscal year 2019.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are things that you as a board can do and an administration that you can do between now and then to make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, if my worst case scenario comes true, you're going to start making decisions for next year's budget and the following year's budget to protect yourself.
Right.
I guess on the surplus, too, back to that, we probably know in those months waiting for the revenue to come in how much we actually need.
Right.
And so do we know? I mean, you may not know this offhand, but I guess you could let us know.
A book downstairs that will help me out.
So maybe if you could get that to us.
Sure.
This is a 10% or 14% or 19%. I guess what I'm saying is, do we need to hold 33% when really we need to hold 12% if the purpose of it is to get us through so we're not borrowing money on next year?
Our current investment strategy has us invested through the beginning of July. So our resources right now, and we'll rely on investments coming due to support our expenses between now and the 1st of June. So at which point we can start investing for next year.
So the critical question is basically, what you're saying is, can we fine tune that 25 to something lower?
Yeah, just because do we know that number?
Yeah, because if you should know it, you project it out, you know what the...
Well, we know salary is till 2018.
Yeah.
And then
right. So and you can play with that 25 and say, ideally, given where you, 22.5 is the number, 19.2 is the number.
Again, it's just a number, so we know.
Yeah. And you take in the other assumptions of the negative impact to your budget and say, well, should we be a couple percentage higher? And if that means rewriting the policy to 23% or 22%, we can use the numbers to do that.
So you've got that flexibility in the way it's written right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Between 10 and 25. Right, right. Where, if at all, are the our bonds that are rolling off? Are they?
They roll off in fiscal year 17.
17, right? Yeah, and that's.
But that's the debt service fund, so that's
right.
Also not
covered.
Yeah, it's not interest.
Correct.
That's typically a wash fund. You
might dollar on dollar.
Yeah.
So, Greg or Becky. I'm looking at the blue lines on 18 through 22 or whatever. Right? So the blue line fund balance is a representation of fund balances off the red line, right?
It's off expenditures.
Yeah.
Off 25,000.
Well, it's a 25 off the expenditures.
Right.
So it's not a revenue. It's
no, it's comparison expenditures.
Just expenditures. So creating the yellow line doesn't create different blue line.
We'll see the whole line again. We're trying to remember right now.
It was a scenario. Oh, so the scenario does not change.
Right. It shouldn't. No, that's a revenue.
The blue line.
Right.
That should be the same.
The blue line is based off
of. It's a percentage of the increase. There's an increase in expenses.
Right.
So 25% of the increase in expenses shows that line. So you should see it growing slowly.
Right.
Basically, 2% or so, and that's what you see.
Okay.
But back to the bonds, so I think, I don't know where you put it on this, but when we get back to this next, one package, start on the flat line, the top line, the lower, it would be good to show. I know it's an in and out, but it's going to fall off. For people in the community seeing
we have to, bonds, that's why I brought it up, because we
yeah,
need to.
I agree.
I think that needs to be represented.
Maybe it should be on that. And it's an in and out, as Kurt described, dollar in, dollar out. But in 17, those dollars coming in are less.
It affects the tax rate.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're coming from somewhere. They're coming from the community. So it's a good representation of the community to say, hey, these today are coming from you, and they're not going to be coming from you later.
And maybe we put a graph in here with tax rate. That's where
that would be.
That would be
right.
But thank you.
The blue line suggests what we're saying should be if we were 25%. So we're showing actually for the next couple of years, we're above 25%.
Correct.
Which is going to help fund your capital projects that you do in the next couple of years.
The policy says if you have a plan, you need to have a plan.
For the 25%, right. That's what our AP says, yeah.
And our
exactly. Which is why we laid that out over the next 3-4 years, right? 5 years. Because when it comes down, by your slide number 15, page 15 is on mine, we hit at 26.02 on FY19, then FY20 we're at 23, FY21 we're at 20. So we are naturally decreasing that balance.
Can I ask one last question? What's the goal now? What's the next step? Where are we going to see?
Becky?
Well, we will bring back to you those scenarios that you requested. Greg is leaving town today after tomorrow, so it won't be the February 22nd board meeting, but it could be in March.
Yeah, it'll be the first one.
Well, and I think it would be good to also see what Patrick asked for But like Kurt mentioned, nothing here ties into actually reducing the budget. And we've talked about reducing the budget. I think in the goals, it's going to say like 3-5%.
Based off of what the state does.
But yes. I'm just wondering if we should, run some scenarios with that if we reduce our budget moving forward, how would it impact the budget?
Let's see what the delta is on the no increase for Stephanie. But what I would like to see to help us with that, so great question, is you have the detail in there. You went back 5 fiscal years and put those detail in there. And, or maybe that's another detail we want to see that detail. But it'd be good to see broken down by category so that you can look at which categories you're really focused on. So I don't know how many pages of data
this will be a great tool when you negotiate next year to run those scenarios that if that formula were to change within the PH contract, again, you will see the effects of it long term.
Well, I'm with that, but that's the 74, the right. Whatever percent number that is, 76% or whatever. What about the other? I mean, that percent we don't need to see the detail. I think the detail we need to see is the other $14 million.
Right.
And that's, if you have that in and we can see where those increases have come from and know what those category items are, then you can look to where you think maybe you can cut. I'm not saying you can cut any of those lines or... You should maybe even cut them off, but you need to know.
I'm conscious of the time. I just want to make sure we wrap up so Becky knows exactly what we want. But there's some requests for certain scenarios. But based on that, with some of this conversation, if we have additional questions, which we will, can we get them to Paul and then to you, Becky? Yeah.
And I would even recommend that this is, for me, a working document that's going to get more and more, not to the GL granular level, we're going to waterfall that back down.
Right.
And I think that's a great place in our finance
The place to start.
We start talking about.
Absolutely.
Back at finance committee, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
We good?
Well, yeah,
thanks, everybody.
Go forward and hopefully get a community finance committee together.
I was looking to Cheryl about that. She's run a couple of them in different ways, so she's very comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Greg, thank you
much.
I appreciate it. We'll stop. We will
have to adjourn the meeting. Adjourn the meeting at 6:56 p.m. May I have a motion to adjourn the February 8th, 2016 Finance Committee of the Whole?
Motion. Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.